On the evening of Radhashtami, I will continue, Krishna willing, Radha willing, asking for the blessings of Hari, Guru, Srila Prabhupada, and all the Vaishnavas. I will continue to discuss Yata Shruta Yata Matihi, as much as I have heard, as I can't say I've realized anything, but something must be there, because I feel some enthusiasm to speak about it. I'll continue to speak on the topic of Radha Katha. Just one reflection. Today, Radhashtami. Some years ago, quite a few years ago now, I was in Vrindavan for Janmashtami, and I thought, I was surprised. It was celebrated, but it didn't seem to be with the kind of fervor that I'd expected. The Kartik Ras Purnima is much more a festival. You don't get a big turnout of people coming. But Radhashtami, I don't remember being in Vrindavan Radhashtami, but I'm told that's a very great festival, and it's just 15 days later. It's a very great festival, and particularly Arbi, that's the Hindi name of one sabji, which is Radharani's favorite. The price goes shooting up because everyone wants to cook for their Thakurji's Radha, Arbi. Harikesh Maharaj, the erstwhile Harikesh Maharaj, recorded once that Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan for Radhashtami. The festival finishes at midday with a feast. Feast means the festival is officially over. You can go on doing kirtan and whatever. And then in the afternoon he left. He went out on his never-ending preaching parikrama. Srila Prabhupada, he celebrated Radhashtami. Every event for him was for preaching. And of course, Srila Prabhupada, his preaching in the West began before he went to the West by writing the books which he intended to bring to the West. And particularly, that was the Srimad Bhagavatam. Now, in the first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the purport to the very first verse of the Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada writes about sex, which we might think, well, I thought it was a spiritual book, and there is discussion of sex. I will read the paragraph which I'm particularly referring to. It's quite a long purport. I'll just extract one paragraph. Srila Prabhupada wrote so many years ago, this is almost 60 years ago now. Srila Prabhupada wrote, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur specifically deals with the original and pure sex psychology, Adirasa, devoid of all mundane inebriety. The whole material, this sentence is all in italics. The whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. In modern civilization, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. Remember, Srila Prabhupada was writing this in Vrindavan in the 1960s. He went up and down to Delhi a lot. But he found this to be so much more true when he went to America. But still, he noted, in modern civilization, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. Therefore, so what is to be deduced from this? Srila Prabhupada says, therefore, sex life is not unreal. Its reality is experienced in the spiritual world. This is sensational. Sex means the material world, right? But Srila Prabhupada says, the reality of sex life is experienced in the spiritual world. And he's cited at the beginning of this paragraph, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in corroboration of this. The original fact is the absolute truth, and thus the absolute truth cannot be impersonal. It is not possible to be impersonal and contain pure sex life. Consequently, the impersonalist philosophers have given indirect impetus to the abominable mundane sex life because they have overstressed the impersonality of the ultimate truth. Consequently, man, without information of the actual spiritual form of sex, has accepted perverted material sex life as the all-in-all. There is a distinction between sex life in the diseased material condition and spiritual sex life. Now, this paragraph could be unpacked. It can be unpacked in so much can be said about it. Some you may think impersonalism. The impersonalist philosophers have given impetus to mundane, abominable, mundane sex life. It's something which needs to be understood. It may not be obvious to understand it. But the point I am going to stress, taking out of this is, after all, Radha Katha, that Srila Prabhupada is writing about spiritual sex life, quoting the Adi Rasa, which he says is pure sex psychology. What we are talking about is God's sex life. That's really sensational. Most people, they'll think, well, God doesn't have sex. We have sex. God doesn't have sex. But Srila Prabhupada says, well, the absolute truth is the... Here we have in this verse, the first verse of Bhagavatam, Janmadyasya Yataha. Everything emanates from him. So there's not sex? Yes, there is. It seems almost inconceivable because it seems to be something, it's quite dirty. It can be regulated, but even then it's not something to be discussed very much in the society of respectable people. Sex. Some people think, well, you go to heaven and then you have so many virgins to enjoy one after the other. God keeps on producing virgins. I don't know what he does with them after they're de-virginized. But the idea is we will go and we will enjoy sex. And what does he do? He's just a virgin factory. Nothing to do with that Brampton guy. Anyway, God has sex life, and that is the purest, topmost subject. Yeah, you can't say God doesn't have sex. It's immoral. We can't say God is immoral. Whatever he does is moral. He sets the standards. And to be specific, it's Krishna's sex life and Radha's sex life. We're talking Radha Katha. Sensational, is it not? We've heard the verdict of what is the difference between mundane lust and pure love. What is the difference? Atendriya Priti Vancha Tare Bale Kam Krishnendriya Priti Ichadhare Premanam. The desire to satisfy one's own senses is called lust, and the desire to satisfy Krishna's transcendental senses is called prema. So one is contaminated. The most intense manifestation of material desire is sex desire. The word kama is generally used to mean desire, but specifically used to mean sexual desire. It can mean any desire, but specifically sexual desire. Therefore, we have Kamadeva, the god of love, known in English as Cupid, or Eros. There's in the center of London, the heart of the British Empire, in the very center of the city, they put a statue of who, what? Who will you put? Was it Nelson? Was it Queen Victoria? It is Eros, the god of love, shooting with his arrow, bows, right there in Piccadilly Circus. It's right there now. I saw many times. Every Saturday, at least, up until the present time, devotees in London, they do Harinam Sankirtan and up to Piccadilly Circus, the place of worship of the god of love. And of course, it's that whole area is just saturated with the most lowly sexual activities. So calm means sex. That's sexual desire, sexual activity. It is the perverted reflection of prem. So when we say prem, just like prem, it's general. It's a general term for love. But specifically when we're talking about gopi prem, just like with kam, it's a general word for lust, but specifically sexual desire. It's a general word for desire, but specifically a term for sexual desire or lust. So in the same way, when we say prem, it's a general term is for love, and specifically for Krishna. But then, prem, raja prem, gopi prem, the most intense manifestation of that prem is the desire of the gopis to serve Krishna, to love Krishna. We're talking about sex. Prema means sex, ultimately, especially in the context of the gopis and Krishna, Radha and Krishna. So, I just read from Srila Prabhupada's purport to the very first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which he alludes to these subjects. I'll just read another part of this purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, "Unscrupulous persons go immediately to the 10th canto and especially to the 5 chapters, which describes the Lord's rasa dance. This portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most confidential part of this great literature. Unless one is thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord, one is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastimes called rasa dance and his love affairs with the gopis. This subject matter is highly spiritual, and only the liberated persons who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramahamsa can transcendentally relish this rasa dance. Srila Vyasadeva therefore gives the reader the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of the pastimes of the Lord." So this is the essence of the pastimes of the Lord, the rasa dance and the loving affairs of Radha and Krishna. Loving affairs of Radha and Krishna, and to put it in, I'm deliberately putting this in a very blunt way, that we're talking about the jugala piriti, kabe ham bujbo se jugala piriti, the love between the divine youthful couple. It's spiritual sex life. Reading that one sentence again that I read at near the beginning of this talk, Srila Prabhupada writes, "The whole material creation is moving under the principle of sex life. In modern civilization, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. So this is true of the perverted reflection of this material world. If we recast that sentence and take that principle back to the spiritual world, then we can say the whole spiritual creation is moving under the principle of sex life. Prem. The whole spiritual creation is moving under the principle of prem, right? Everyone will agree. At least those who have studied Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, the spiritual science as given in Bhagavatam. The whole spiritual creation is moving under the principle of sex life. Sex life, in modern civilization, sex life is the focal point for all activities. In Vrindavan, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Wherever one turns his face, he sees sex life predominant. So the whole spiritual creation is moving under the principle of prem. But that prem means the sex of Radha and Krishna. And we don't usually use these terms. Because that very term, it seems to us something so incongruous with spiritual life. But it is absolutely congruous with spiritual life. This point ultimately is to be understood. When we understand that, as Vivekananda said, Vaishnavism is a sex cult, but he said that in a disparaging way. But actually, we would defend against that, because what is understood as sex, Vaishnavism is not meant for that. Vivekananda was referring to the abominable misuse of Gauriya Vaishnavism. But actually, it's true. Everything is a sex cult. The whole material world is a sex cult. The whole spiritual world is a sex cult. But there's such a difference between the sex of this material world and the sex of the spiritual world. But that's it. This powerful force by which we are bound, yaya samohita jiva, Atmanam Trigunatmakam. We're bound in this material existence by the three modes of material nature. Maya works, and her strongest force, or the strongest manifestation of her force, is the sex attraction. So that sex attraction, that should be redirected to Krishna. We shouldn't think that Krishna doesn't have sex. Then we come to impersonalism. These things should be discussed very carefully, but it should be understood. Otherwise, we want to sanitize Krishna to the point of being a neuter, of being a eunuch. He's the spiritual enjoyer, Purusha. Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. Purusha means male, virulent, strong, dominating. And he has his prakriti, who is Radha, who interacts with him perfectly. Not always smoothly, but perfectly. And the interaction of the two gives rise to everything else. She perfectly complements him. Purusha and Prakriti. Prakriti means female. Purush, Govindamadi Purusham. Purusha means the original male. There's the original male and the original female. And misunderstanding of who is the original male and who is the original female, and considering ourselves to be male or female in this material world, is the cause of all our problems. So prem generally means love. It particularly means sex. And that's true, especially in Vrindavan, also in Dwarka. Very formally, properly in Ayodhya, in Dwarka also very formally and properly, even in Vaikuntha. And there are songs by the great Telugu Vaishnava poet Annamacharya, who he sings of the loving affairs between Lakshmi and Vaikunthanath. It's not seen publicly, but they enjoy conjugal bliss also. Now you may think, well, this is too much. What are we doing talking about the sex of God? And that's too much. Prabhupada doesn't talk about that. Well, let's listen to a quote from The Science of Self-Realization. All essays and conversations of Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada writes, "The most prominent feature of this material world is sex, and that is also present in Krishna. We are worshipping Radha and Krishna, and attraction exists between them. But material attraction and spiritual attraction are not the same. In Krishna, sex is real. But here in the material world, it is unreal. Everything we deal with here is present in the spiritual world, but here it has no real value. It is only a reflection. In store windows, we see many mannequins, but no one cares about them because everyone knows they are false. A mannequin may be very beautiful, but still it is false. When people see a beautiful woman, however, they are attracted because they think she is real. In actuality, the so-called living are also dead because this body is simply a lump of matter. As soon as the soul leaves the body, no one would care to see the so-called beautiful body of the woman." So in this paragraph, Srila Prabhupada is the main gist of what Srila Prabhupada writes about most of all is how in this material world, sex is false. But that's all based on the premise that he establishes that real sex is in the spiritual world. Krishna's sex. Krishna's sex is real. More from the science of self-realization. Srila Prabhupada writes, "In unalloyed love of God, we have to engage our senses, sarvendriya, all the senses. This means that sex is also to be engaged in Krishna consciousness. The conception of God as a father or mother does not allow the engagement of one's sex in the service of the Lord, because there is no sexual relationship with the father and mother. But in the conception of God as a lover, there is sexual engagement also." So Srila Prabhupada is suggesting here that we can have sex with God. Yeah, just take it as it is. That's what he says. Continuing to read from this paragraph. "Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the most perfect information of our engagement with the Supreme Lord. In other religious conceptions of life, God is at the utmost taken as the father or mother. Many worshippers in India take goddess Kali to be the representation of God." That's the mother form of God. "Of course, that is not sanctioned, but the belief is there, and also in the Christian religion, the conception of God is as a father. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informs us that one can even have sexual engagement with the Lord." Not me saying, it's Srila Prabhupada saying it. And he's citing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. "Chaitanya Mahaprabhu informs us that one can even have sexual engagement with the Lord. This information is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's unique contribution." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Nyasi Shiromani, he's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita as the greatest sannyasi. He comes to teach us that we can have sexual engagement with God. Continuing to read this. "In this material world, sexual engagement is considered to be the highest engagement, the greatest pleasure, although it exists only in a perverted form. No one, however, has conceived that there can be sexual engagement in the spiritual world. There is not a single instance of such theology anywhere in the entire world. This information is given for the first time by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One can have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as one's husband, as one's lover. This is possible in the worship of Radha and Krishna, but no one, especially the impersonalists, can understand Radha Krishna. The impersonalists have no idea. They cannot even conceive that God has form. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that not only does God have form, but he has sex life also. This is the highest contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Who said that Srila Prabhupada didn't teach the highest thing? It's right there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches that we can have sexual engagement with the Supreme Lord. Of course, remember, I read that also from Srila Prabhupada's stating, we have to go gradually, take it step by step. That he says much more often, that we have to take it gradually. But he doesn't deny that we can have sexual engagement with the Lord. But that is on the completely pure platform. What is this sex? We're talking about sex. What is such a powerful force? The little pleasure it affords ties us in material life. Maitunya agara. The shackles of sex life are so powerful that great yogis and mystics, they, with tremendous effort, they try to get free from this sexual attraction. With tremendous effort, extending over many lives, it's very hard for them to do so. It's the great fall down. Even in our ISKCON, so many men accepted sannyas with the eagerness to serve the mission of Srila Prabhupada and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but came to shame. I don't want to blame, but they came to shame by being lured again by that which they were confident they could transcend. Not so easy, not so easy. Sadhu Savdhan. We have the great influential thinkers of the world in the modern age. One of the greatest thinkers who's vastly influenced. It's hard to influence how much Sigmund Freud has influenced the whole Western psyche, and via the whole world psyche. Underlying the idea of sexual liberation, which has really been a major change in the whole outlook of the Western world, and has given rise to so many things. And first of all, sexual liberation of women, and then homosexuals, and consensual sex is okay, as some consensual sex between adults is okay, if it's just for fun, what the hell? For instance, it's been very much shaped by his theories. And in his theories, it's all based on sex. And when this point was brought to Srila Prabhupada, he said, he's right. Freud says the whole human psychology is based on sex. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, he agreed with it. Some years ago, I was in Foyle's bookshop, which is a very famous bookshop among book fans. There's a, what's that called? Bibliophiles. It's a very famous, in the center of London. It's just a few minutes walk from our center in London, our ISKCON temple in London. Few minutes, it's, if you walk fast, you can be there in 3 or 4 minutes. I used to distribute books out there. Anyway, I was there once, and they had a, every week they have a display on a different theme. So 1 week, they had the theme, books about Freud, not Clement Freud, who's his grand nephew or something, but Sigmund Freud. And just hundreds of books about Freud. And then there was one placard giving a general overview, and it stated that even though pretty much all the theories of Freud have been discredited, still he's tremendously influential. He got the point. Sex is so powerful. And the other streams of thought. Religion is very powerful. Science is very powerful. Philosophy, maybe. All intertwined with religion and science. But this Freud, he practically, he by his efforts, and then others who came after him, Carl Jung was like his disciple who was more sensible than Freud, and he took a different angle, and he was a mystic of or inclined to what. Anyway, Freud was tremendously influential, and practically the whole field of modern psychology is predicated. There wasn't even any field of study known as psychology before. Tremendously influential. Because he got the point. Sex is what it's all about. Love is all you need. Translate that into stark terms. All you need is love, love. All you need is sex. You need somebody to love. Now they say, well, love is more than sex. Well, that may be true. Actually, the Bhagavatam accepts that sex is the basic principle. Nunang pramata kurite vikarma. No, I'm getting it wrong again. Pungsastriya mituni bhavametam tayoraho hridaya grantimahuhu. The basic principle, Srila Prabhupada translates this as, the basic principle of material existence is the attraction between male and female, which causes a strong bond on the heart. And this gives rise to attachment to body, home, country, property, wealth, children, relatives, society, and in this way one is illusion, thinking in terms of I, me, and mine. So you may say, well, love is more than that. It's about being nice to each other and caring for each other and setting up a home together and having children together. But the core principle is sex. Freud found that out. He's an atheist. He analyzes desire, but he can't explain where it originates. And that's a tremendous oversight of the whole atheistic scientific community, and even the religious scientific community. They didn't get that point. The consciousness, what is consciousness? This is a question which has arisen in the consciousness of scientists, which wasn't there. So they've come to the point of thinking, what is consciousness? And of course, some of them want to translate it back into materialistic terms, that there is no consciousness. There's no specific phenomenon known as consciousness. It, like everything else, it is simply a product of material energies in, everything is material energies interacting. The scientists, these atheistic scientists, they are shaktas. They believe in energy only, but they don't recognize that there is a source of the energy, and a director of this energy, the Shaktiman. So they want to, they want to say that most atheistic scientists, and even many religious scientists, they want to say that religion, evolution comes about, there's a big bang, there's a lot of chemicals, and they all fiddle and fuddle and muddle and middle, and eventually some living beings come out of them, and then, to make a long story short, here we are all today. And it's all survival of the fittest and struggle for survival, and then reproduction of species, and the evolution has hardwired us so that we want to have children and then protect the children. But where does that desire come from? Why does it that one bunch of chemicals has a desire to interact with another bunch of chemicals and produce yet another bunch of chemicals? In other words, why does a man want to have sex with a woman and produce a child? Why? Where does desire come from? That is unanswered. It's not even questioned. Desire comes from the source of everything. That is God. As Srila Prabhupada has written in this purport, as he writes repeatedly and comments repeatedly, that about in modern civilization, sex life is the focal point for all activities. Actually, all of civilization, but in modern civilization, it is openly emphasized so much. Not that it's something new in civilization, not that vulgarity and pornography and prostitution and licentiousness, these are something new in the modern age. That's been there in every civilization. There may be more puritanical or Victorian short interludes, but practically civilization is an arrangement for fulfilling desires. Art was originally religious, right, in Europe. But then there came secular art, and one of the main subjects was nudes, female nudes, before they had photography. What was that? In the name of art, you can ogle at the body of a female. Interestingly, most of them were quite plump. The concept of beauty has changed. Previously, it used to be thought that a plump woman, what we would now call plump, is very beautiful. And nowadays, they have to be skinny. Anyway, but the civilization that promotes sex, unless you keep a hold on it, if you just let it go wild, then that'll be the fall down of the civilization. And then you can't maintain discipline. I'm talking absolutely in secular terms here. I'm not talking anything religious. As they become dissolute, their intelligence becomes dissipated. They can't focus. They can't be disciplined. When we're talking about spiritual sex here, and you might think, well, the Christians think, well, sex in marriage, that's very good. That's spiritual. That's a gift of God. Love in marriage is spiritual. That's a Christian idea. I believe that Protestants particularly promote that. And in the Roman Catholic Church, divorcees are not allowed to take Holy Communion. Communion means yoga, it means linking with God. You have to take prasad. It's not really prasad, it's just they have wafers of bread, with practically tasteless, which it's not really sharing a meal as Jesus did, but it's symbolic of being, you're supposed to believe in transubstantiation. That's one of the major differences between Protestants and Catholics, that the priest blesses the little wafer of bread and it becomes Jesus, and then you eat Jesus. But that's the major part of the Holy Mass in Roman Catholicism, the most spiritual thing you can do. But if you're a divorcee, you're not allowed to do that. So they also have the idea, sex, yeah, it's okay. It's love in marriage. That is very good. That is a gift of God. But rape, they don't agree with that. It's actually the same desire. It's sex desire, but the way it is expressed. In marriage, very good. Rape, not at all good. Ultimately, it's the same desire. It's a perverse desire. It's the desire to indulge one's bodily senses. So even the sex life within marriage, that is supposed to be regulated. Even that was a great debate at one point. When in America and in the Western world, when first of all this artificial contraception was being introduced, that was considered absolutely wrong by Christians. But now it's turned around that many Christians think round the other way. It's wrong not to use contraception because then you produce so many unwanted children. So what's the point I'm making? That sex, so much philosophy and morals and the whole way we consider the world, it's centered around sex. And then we're talking about the religious life and then celibacy. It's considered very pure. The priest who's a celibate, the sannyasi, he's a celibate. But the very, very high aspiration. Let me dedicate my life only for God. But so many times that we've seen the high aspiration is undone by the low inclination. Sex desire drags us down. The topmost sannyasi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was very interested in sex. He didn't discuss it openly, but everyone knew. His aspiration is as of Radha, seeking Krishna. Ultimately sex, their union, they come together, they're very happy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very interested, but he did not give impetus to the abominable, mundane sex life. He was very, very strict. His one renunciant devotee, who really didn't do anything wrong, there was just a slight shadow of something which might have appeared to be wrong. But he was punished so severely. Just Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted to make that point. That for persons who are desiring to worship the spiritual sex life of Radha and Krishna, and who have taken to the path of renunciation, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also said in relation to Prataparudra Maharaj, atayoshitangscha, vishayanam atayoshitangscha, ha hanta hanta vishabhakshanamasadhu. For one who has renounced this world for the sake of worship, nishkinchananam bhagavad bhajanon makasya parang param jigamishor bhavasagra. So for one who has renounced this world for the sake of crossing over this material existence and worshipping Krishna, to interact with a materialistic person or with a woman is worse than deliberately drinking poison. In every religious system, people understand. Buddhism is not really religious, but they understand also. If we're going to get released from material bondage, you have to give up sex life. The original Buddhism was monastic only. Later, the Mahayana brought in the concept of, or emphasized the concept of mercy, grace. But Buddhists, yogis, Mayavadis, they all have difficult sadhana, difficult process. Why? Because that sexual desire is so difficult to overcome. But the Vaishnavas, especially the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they understand that sex originates in God. They understand this. The perfect explanation. Where does the sexual desire come from? The scientists can't explain. There's the Big Bang, and then where did desire come from? Between the Big Bang and 21st century pornography, desire. Where did the desire? Desire is the hidden part in the equation. Where does desire come from? They don't put it in the equation. They don't even want to think about it. Where does desire come from? Buddhists can't say. Mayavadis can't say. They have some weird. Well, it's not an explanation. They don't even attempt to explain it. They just say it's anivachaniya. Why is there maya? Don't know. It's unexplainable. Great philosophy. Terrible philosophy. Useless philosophy. The Bhagavatam is perfect philosophy. To explain this point, which is so prominent, dominant in every sphere of life. Where does it come from? Why is it there? Different religionists are trying to deal with the sex desire. Should we have married priests, unmarried priests, different religionists, non-religionists, homosexuality okay, transgender, everything okay? They're all trying to deal with this sexual desire. Where does it come from? It comes from God. And many religionists will think, well, you can't say that. That's blasphemy. That's sacrilegious. But they don't understand that the sex life of God is pure. Our desire is impure. But when we understand that that comes from Him, then we can, by proper understanding, we can make a proper sadhana. We have the sadhya, the ultimate goal to be attained. As Stephen Covey used to say, start with the goal in mind. If we know that the goal is to worship God, all right, different religionists will agree with that, or to become free from material desire, that the Mayavadis and the Buddhists, they will also accept that. Well, Buddhists, anyway, Buddhists. So, but first of all, we should understand, there's a problem. What is the cause of the problem? If we know the cause of the problem, we're halfway to making the solution. There isn't really a problem at all. In the absolute truth, there is no problem. There is sex, but there is no problem. Here in this material world, there is sex, and it's a big problem because it binds us in suffering again and again and again. Why is that? Because it's a perverse reflection of the sex life of God. Now, we're talking about spiritual sex, right? And another way people might think of that, tantric sex. That sexuality is seen as spiritual in its own right. Man and woman, I never heard of homosexual tantrism, but it's always male and female. Even if the woman's dead, that's also there. Shava sadhana, having sex with the dead body of a woman, that's also there in tantrism. I don't know if it goes on to the present day, but it's definitely part of the left-wing tantric path. So the idea is that in tantric sadhana, the man and the woman unite, and you have in mind that this symbolizes the ultimate unity of the soul with the divine. You become that loving or sexual feeling just becomes one with the whole divine what? That's undefined. The oneness. It's been there for a long, long time, before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, before Buddhism. Tantrism that very much entered Buddhism in Eastern India, in Bengal, and then later, that's the supposed history of how the Sahajiya cult of Vaishnavism, it came. The Sahajiya cult was there before Vaishnavism, before Chaitanya. Vaishnavism's been there, but before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the idea of sex as sadhana, that just got grafted onto. The supposed history is that the tantric, they were aligned with Buddhism, and then as Buddhism, for whatever complex reasons, faded out, then the tantric or the Sahajiya cult. In tantrism, there are different schools and this and that. The Sahajiya cult got grafted onto Gaudiya Vaishnavism. And it's quite a cult. They'll talk about Radha Krishna and the love of Radha and Krishna, but for them, these terms are symbols. And it's all brought together with the act of sex. They take it to be spiritual. So tantrism has always been there in what we nowadays call Hindu society, at least for as long as it can be known. It was never accepted as anything orthodox or respectable, but it's always been there. Purusha and Prakriti is another major part of what we can call Hindu, what people call Hindu philosophy, Vedic philosophy, that the professional philosophers, they identify Purusha and Prakriti as a discussion of the Sankhya philosophy. Well, that's in the Puranas also, and yoga, of course, they say yoga has come from Sankhya. But it's a major discussion, and there are different understandings of that also. But ultimately, Purush means Krishna, Prakriti means Radha. Their union is actual love. They're very complex discussions of Purusha and Prakriti, but it can be understood very simply. Krishna loves Radha, Radha loves Krishna. It's an eternal principle. This material world is populated. Lord Vishnu gives his glance, and then Shiva and Parvati, they unite in sexual union. That is worshipped up to the present day. Up to the present day, millions of people worship daily the linga and the yoni, in the Lord Shiva, in their homes, in the temples. That's accepted. Central, orthodox part of Hindu culture, worship of Shiva. Vaishnavas, they may also do. They worship the Lord Shiva as the philosophically, hardly anyone has any philosophy to understand it, but The understanding is there. Lord Shiva is the father of all living beings in this world. Aham Bija Pradapita, I'm the seed-giving father of all living beings. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and the Acharyas explain that he performs this function through Lord Shiva. So that is accepted. So why not the Gaurya Vaishnav understanding that the sex life, that is the source of generation, the original progenitor, Lord Shiva. But then that sex life is accepted. There's no shame in Hindu culture of worshipping Shiva, Parvati, Uma Shankar as the linga and the yoni, which means the penis and the vagina. That's what it means. There's no shame in that. It's not considered some... In fact, it's considered very religious and very pious. And it is very religious and very pious to do so. But then why do they shy away from Radha and Krishna? It's just maybe there's the sexual life of Radha and Krishna. Maybe it's just because it's not known enough or not publicized. Should we publicize it more? But maybe it just seems to be too human-like and people find it difficult to understand. Shiva and Parvati, Shiva is a god. He's of tremendous power, tremendous austerity. He's not like an ordinary person. But Radha and Krishna, they may seem to be like ordinary people. So it's maybe hard to understand that they are the supreme god and the supreme goddess. In the Chinese, what do you want to call it? Philosophy. Is it philosophy? Well, it is philosophy. Yeah, broad term. Maybe we should make it broader. That philosophy in the Western world means something that began with the ancient Greeks and got a big boost with René Descartes, and it's all in the West. That's what philosophy means in their understanding. But we can take, Chinese philosophy. Okay, let's call it philosophy. And what is that? What is a major principle therein? Yin and Yang. Yin means the negative, the passive, the subdued, the shaded, the hidden, the female. And Yang means the positive, the prosperous, the outgoing, the bright, the active male principle of everything in existence. And to make the equilibrium between that is considered one kind of perfection. We could... That is redolent of the Purusha Prakriti, that when they shouldn't, in the Purusha Prakriti understanding, they should never be completely in harmony, because then there's no, they're not totally integrated. They never totally integrate. You've seen the yin yang sign. It's not that they integrate, but they have their own part of the sphere, but one comes into the other, one part of one comes into the other, they coexist. So also with Purusha and Prakriti, when there's ultimate equilibrium, that means there's no creation going on. The creation exists as long as there are differences between Purusha and Prakriti. And the Mayavadis, they want to make everything just completely no yin, no yang, and just everything totally balanced, and then you become zeroed out. Then there's nothing left, then there's no material life left. But that yin and yang interaction, if we take that up to the spiritual existence of Radha and Krishna, that is the source of all pleasure. Krishna is the supreme male. Radha is the supreme female. Krishna doesn't want to be a female. Radha doesn't want to be a male. They're very happy. They don't think about it. He is he and she is she. and they are all together, but in their specific roles. Of course, Krishna sometimes may playfully dress as a woman, and sometimes Radha may playfully dress as a male. But that's play, that's understood. Krishna is the supreme male, Radha is the supreme female, and they're coming together in loving pastimes. It means perfect equilibrium, yes, you can say that is in Vaikuntha. But there's disarray in Vrindavan. Chaos. It just doesn't descend into total chaos. The expert management of Yoga Maya, of Purnamasi and her assistants, they call Radha the queen of Vrindavan, but actually, as far as it's like in the government, you have the president or the prime minister, and he's in the news and everything. But behind the scenes, there's the whole bureaucracy, the civil service, and they're the ones who are actually orchestrating so many different things. And they have to, when the prime minister goes out, another one comes in, and the policies change, but the bureaucrats remain the same, and they try to keep things on a steady course. It's a rough analogy. But Purnamasi is there quietly behind the scenes, and she has her assistants, Vrinda and all their assistants, just orchestrating those pastimes. And they're always on the edge of descending into total disaster and chaos. And that's all the fun. There's no such thing in Vaikuntha. Everything is peaceful, settled. It's not as much fun. It's not as exciting as Vrindavan. Vrindavan, lot of transcendental anxiety. But that's all the fun. Krishna's full of fun. Radha is full of fun. There's no... If you want absolute yin-yang equilibrium, then you have to go to the Brahma Jyoti. No fun. No fun whatsoever. The yogis, what do they want? Chitta vritti nirodha. Just put an end to all the activities of the consciousness and just become bzzz, boy. And there's no even zzz because there's no, it's something, it seems similar to the Buddhist idea of void. There's just nothing left there. But Krishna doesn't want that. Krishna doesn't want to merge into any impersonal. He wants to find Radha. Radha wants to find Krishna. The devotees want to bring them together. You can, all right, if you want for the sake of argument, we'll say, okay, your Brahma Jyoti is the best. Okay, all right. Advaita Vad Ki Jai. If you want, you can say that. I didn't say it. I'm just pretending. But we, this is like Bilva Mangal Thakur. He said that I was worshipped by those on the path of impersonal monism, but I blew it. I lost it. There was this little boy who tricked me, and now I've completely lost it. I've become mad after him. So we don't want all this balance, everything peaceful, mode of goodness. Vrindavan is wild mood swings. What is Vaikuntha? Everything is calm and sweet and peaceful and joyful. That's a lot better than Chitta Vritti Nirodha, where there's just nothing going on. It's nice in Vaikuntha, but Vrindavan is like wild mood swings and chaotic pastimes. Sometimes yin predominates, sometimes Radha predominates, sometimes yang, Krishna, predominates. Sometimes there's intense despair, sometimes there's intense bliss. Even when they come together, Radha and Krishna, that's the perfection. But it's not going to stay there. It's not going to stay. Bring them together. You say, okay, everything fixed up. We got Radha and Krishna together. Great. They're together. They're enjoying in the groves of Vrindavan. But then, there's no time in the spiritual world. Who says there's no time? There's no time in the spiritual world, but wait a minute. The birds started chirping. and there's the red of Aruna. Oh no, Radha and Krishna, they have to get up and go back and swap their clothing back again and put their hair in order and get back to bed and pretend they've been sleeping all night in bed. It's an emergency. Wake them up. Get them up. Get them in order. Get them out of here. Harmonization of bringing them together. The mighty time factor, which in this material world destroys everything. The mighty time factor in the spiritual world brings Radha and Krishna together and then forcibly separates them again. And again, they're disunited. And again, they have to try to unite. So it's a cycle going on. There's coming together, yoga, milana, and then viyoga, being separated again. And it goes on like this. Even in the complete harmony, they're together. But the force of disharmony, of separation, is impending. So it's always bliss. It's always a churning. It doesn't come to an end. But that is all bliss. In this material world, it doesn't come to an end either. Although, even sometimes Krishna says, okay, time to breathe in. And then all the universe is going, okay, you've had enough being prime ministers and worms in stool and all that. Okay, just take a rest for some time now, for a long time. And then you can go back later on to being Indra and Chandra and worms in stool. You can do all that again. Radha Krishna Pranamo Jugala Kisho. How will people understand all this? How will people understand? It's impossible. Who can understand? Krishna himself doesn't understand. Radha doesn't even try. She's a woman after all. She hasn't tried to understand all these things. Krishna, he's a philosopher. He comes, he speaks philosophy. He gives the Vedas, Hayagriva avatar, Hansa avatar. Krishna himself speaks philosophy. He even speaks philosophy to the gopis. And the gopis say, you know, we're just housewives. Don't talk philosophy to us. We just want to kiss you. That's all our philosophy. We don't want all that. Who can understand these things? We're all so unqualified. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radha has come. Boroja Jubati Bhavera Bhakati Shakati Hoitoka. Who but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could make it possible for this Prema Rasa Sima, Radha Mahima, Prema Rasa Sima, the ultimate limit of love, Krishna's sex life? Who can give us entrance into that? That is possible by Radha herself coming as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Srila Prabhupada came as the representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to deliver knowledge, as we just read. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches that we can have sexual engagement with the Supreme Lord. Now, we don't go out and speak that in public all the time. If at all, at any time. But we do distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. And when people come, we can speak to them. We can tell them. We deal with everyone individually according to their need. Mostly we first of all try to convince them, you're not this body. If we meet with Freudian psychologists, we can tell them sex is in God. They don't believe in God. Poor people. It's so far away. We're so fallen. But by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we have come a long way, at least theoretically, that we can even discuss about God's sex life. It doesn't go on in other sampradayas even very highly advanced, very respectable Vaishnavas. They don't discuss these things. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's special contribution to inform us that God has sex life and that we can join with that also. And we should, at least to assist him in his loving affairs. Very, very, very high topics, no doubt about it. Vancha kalpa tarubhyas charkripa sindhubhya evacha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya charnakang padayane patya kridvacha kakushatameta dahambravime. He sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat guranga chandra charane kurutano. Parivadatu jano yata tatava nanumo karona vayam vicharayamaha hari rasa madira madati matta bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.